Hey, Truth Seekers. Hi. Happy Thursday. Malloy here on the Nova, on the Nova M Radio Network. We have to do something about that music so it doesn't stop so abruptly. Welcome to the program. Glad you could make it. Hope you hang out for a while. What do we got for you tonight? Let me think. What happened today? Oh, that's right. Barack Obama in Berlin. Did you see any of that? We have some things to say about that a little bit later in the program. Not all of it will be pleasing to Obama supporters, but what the hell. I was impressed. I really was. I thought it was great. This guy continues to draw these crowds. What was it? Kennedy had about 120,000 people there for his Ben Ein Berliner speech way back in early 60s. And Reagan had 40,000 people there for his tear down this wall farce. It was already everybody in the U.S. State Department and in the Soviet state, whatever they call it, foreign ministry. Everybody knew that the wall was coming down anyway. It's part of Gorbachev's Glasnost and Perestroika efforts to stop the insanity of 70 years of communism in that country. Everybody knew it was going to happen. That's why Reagan's handler said, "Quick, quick, quick, let's get him over there. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And the answer was, "Hey, jerk." Whoops, almost said a bad word. Of course we're going to tear down the wall. You knew we were going to tear down the wall 3 months ago. The whole Reagan, I'm digressing, the whole Reagan thing with right-wingers just astounds me. I mean, it really does. Especially back during the Republican primaries where everybody tried to out-Reagan each other. Remember all that? Reagan was a goddamn actor. You know, he was an actor. They fed him lines. They gave him scripts, you know. Anyway, so Obama shows up there today and draws 250,000. Whew. The TV anchors covering all this are just absolutely twisted into knots. I've been watching some of these little daily interviews from Brian Williams and Charlie Gibson. Is Gibson over there? I think Gibson is. I don't know. And the woman on CBS, Katie Couric. These little interviews where the questions are just asinine. They have absolutely nothing to do with anything. You know why that is? Because the TV anchors can't get ahead of this story. They can't get out in front of it. They are reactive. They don't know what the hell to do. They have no idea. It was not supposed to be this way. It was supposed to be a McCain-Hillary Clinton matchup, A. When A didn't work, then it's supposed to be McCain. Because McCain is a complete jerkwad who will do exactly what corporate America tells him to do. And among the leading lights in corporate America is corporate media. And McCain, they keep putting him in front of cheese counters. People love Obama. That's the problem. See, that's the real problem. He's young. He's attractive. He's not white. And America has a reputation of being a racist, murderous, KKK, everybody's got a gun, lynch them, beat them up, drag them behind pickup trucks kind of society. That's our reputation around the planet. Have you ever traveled outside the United States? If you have, you know what our reputation is. We are seen as an absolute racist society. You know, the rest of the world couldn't process that at the end of World War II, when African American soldiers came back here, they had to ride in the back of the Greyhound bus just to get from the point where they were mustered out to their hometowns. The German POWs had more rights and privileges than American black GIs. Oh my God, the rest of the world knew all this and still does. It's just the average American doesn't what the hell I just said. You have no idea what I'm talking about. Oh, well, I really don't care. I don't care. I said years ago, the job of this program is not to educate anybody, because I realize even if I tried, it's a fool's errand because we are so ignorant in this society. We really are. No, not you. And not me. Oh, no, no, no. I'm not talking about you. I'm damn sure not talking about myself. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, people love Barack Obama. They can't help themselves. Look at this guy. What's not to love? He's got the body language of a leader, a man extremely self-confident. He doesn't have that little flapping motion that, you know, like some kind of a broken marionette that what's his name, McCain has. He doesn't have that kind of sneery, condescending attitude that Bush has that is only the attitude of bullies and jackasses and ignorant people. He doesn't have the look of a blood drinker like Cheney. All of a sudden, here's this kind of dark-skinned guy, and America looks and they say, well, yeah, he's certainly got some African in there somewhere, and they can't figure it out. What? This is the Democratic, this is an American presidential candidate, a real one? No, how can that be? But they love him. Part of the reason they love him is that. They see Barack Obama as someone who took the system over here and stomped the hell out of it. Defeated it. The system that said, okay, you could be Jesse Jackson, you could be Al Sharpton, you can even be John Lewis. But, now listen, boy, that's about as far as you can go. We don't mind niggers in our Congress or somebody like Jesse Jackson. No. Well, Barack Obama took that by the throat and choked the life out of it. So here he comes, walking down the gangway. Did you see him today? Strutting down the gangway. Hello, Berlin! Obama's in the house. Hello! Hi, how are you? What is going on? 20,000 of you here, huh? Okay, I've got one hell of a speech for you. Hey, you ready? You ready? Woo! And the American press corps going along with this, they're like, what do we do? This guy's not predictable. What are we going to do? He's making speeches like he's ahead of state. Oh, that's our hook. Let's say he's making speeches like he's ahead of state and he's not. He's just a candidate. Oh my God. Is he breaking some kind of protocol? Yes, he's breaking protocol. Oh, well, there's your story then. He's breaking protocol. He shouldn't be doing this. Oh my God. Is this arrogance? No, well, you know, black people can't be arrogant. this is not arrogance. What is it? They have no idea. These dumbasses have no idea. Whether you like Obama or don't like him, for his political point of view, or whether or not he's a corporatist or a junior corporatist or a closet Republican, you know what? That's beside the point. This guy has it. He's got the Q factor. That's television talk. The Q factor belongs to people over whom the camera will just fawn and drool. The camera loves people with the Q factor. Barack Obama, I forced myself to look at ABC and NBC during the nights of Barack Obama's global walkabout just to see how he handles himself in front of these nudniks, Charlie Gibson and Brian Williams. I mean, what a couple of jerkballs. Charlie Gibson especially, acting like he's all put out. He's just got his $3,000 suit in a wad over Barack Obama. Wait a minute, Barack Obama, what? Have you noticed Charlie Gibson? And Brock just sits there and says to him, well, Charlie, you know, so that's what John McCain said. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. He said I'd rather win the election than win a war. Jesus. But the subtext of what Barack Obama is saying to Charlie Gibson is, man, what are you bringing that kind of trash to this little interview I've given you? Eh? Who do you work for? Fox? I feel so good that I want you to know.
Show, only on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. So anyway, Barack Obama's global walkabout has been nothing except a massive success for his campaign. I honestly believe it has given people around the globe hope. You know, after 8 years of these murderous sons of bitches we have now, the popularity of the United States, whatever that means, has gone into the toilet since Cheney and Bush took over. The rest of the world sees us in a way that we can't, because we have a corrupted, filthy media that refuses to do anything even remotely resembling the truth. And when they're confronted with the truth, as they are with Barack Obama's global walkabout, they wet themselves. They don't know what the hell to do. So they just sit there in their little one-on-one interviews that I don't understand why Barack Obama grants to these thugs over and over again, and ask him the most asinine, inane questions. Well, did you hear what Senator McCain said about you today? You know, they sound like goddamn, 10th graders. What did Charlie Gibson and Brian Williams get paid a year? $6, $7, $8, $10, $12 million to ask questions like they were high school 10th graders? No offense to 10th graders. I'm sorry, boys and girls, but you know what I'm trying to say. People around the world are sick to death of the attitude, the American attitude, as projected by Bush and Cheney. They're sick of it. We do not own the goddamn world. We don't own it. Mr. and Mrs. America, it's not ours. Although a lot of Americans like to think they own it because Jesus gave it to us or something. And Ben Stein, this guy, he looks like a turd. He walks like a turd. And he gets on another turd's program, Glenn Beck, on CNN Headlines. I don't get this. I really don't. Glenn Beck is, when you look at Glenn Beck and Ben Stein together, and you look at them, bloated, white, snarky, they think they're funny, Republicans, conservatives, and I don't care about Glenn Beck's alcoholism, all this other crap that he likes to talk about. Oh, I'm an alcoholic, yes, but I haven't had a drink in, 12 minutes or whatever the hell he said. You know, I couldn't care less. He's a loser. And so is Stein. This Ben Stein, he is now referring to Obama using code words that Obama might be a Nazi. Stein and Beck, two white turds, were sitting discussing Obama's plan to deliver his speech accepting the Democratic presidential nomination at Denver's Invesco Field. Not going to be inside, some closed venue. It's going to be outdoors in a football field. That's a football field, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. And Stein stated that he did not, quote, like the idea of Senator Obama giving his acceptance speech in front of 75,000 wildly cheering people, 75,000 people at an outdoor sports palace. Well, that's something the Fuhrer would have done. Jesus Christ! That's something the Fuhrer would have done? What did I hear on Oberman's program tonight? When this twit, George Bush, decided to invade a country that couldn't defend itself, 10 NBA games were stopped while on the Jumbotron they put the son of a bitch on so he could say, I have decided tonight to attack Iraq because they have nuclear weapons. You know, I wish people like Ben Stein and Glenn Beck, that somebody would just pull the chain, flush the commode, wash these people down the toilet. This is the kind of stuff that the world is so sick of. This kind of smarmy, bloated, white boy, Republican attitude. A lot of Americans have had enough of this crap, too, I'll tell you. Really. Every one of these people, have you ever noticed that these white, bloated, Republican commentators and talk show hosts, whether they're on TV or radio, are all white, bloated, nasty-ass Republican? Have you ever noticed that?
Well, I don't think that Senator Obama should get his acceptance speech in front of 75,000 wildly cheering people. 75,000 people at an outdoor sports palace. Well, that's something the Fuhrer would have done. You would know, wouldn't you, Stein? Huh? You would know, wouldn't you? Good God. And then this, the other turd, Glenn Beck, says, well, yeah, you know what? I've been saying that we're headed toward a Mussolini-style presidency forever. Stein. Well, I think Beck. I mean, it's crazy, Stein. It's a scary situation. I mean, I think he has to recognize some bounds on his own ego. I understand politicians are politicians because they have ego deficit problems, and they try to cure them by having lots of worship and adulation and adoration. But 75,000 people screaming at an outdoor arena, that's just too much. It's scarily authoritarian. Like Juan Perón. Oh, Jesus. God, somebody flush these people.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Yeah, we're talking a little bit here about Barack Obama's global tour. It is impressive. You got to admit that. And I think part of the reason, like I said, he is very charismatic. I would imagine just being in the room with Barack Obama, you would feel like you were in the presence of somebody. You understand what I'm saying? Some people just have that particular persona, that particular aura. It's just there. Barack Obama happens to have it. But I think people around the globe, other than here in the United States, find themselves less constrained than Americans do in their effusiveness about Barack Obama. We are constrained because we are all products of a racist society. You know, we still have people in this country who's screaming about Mexicans and Hondurans. You know, this is a very racist society. It was founded on the belief that slavery was okay and that dark people represented two-thirds of a human being. Come on, God damn. How long has it been since we've had laws on the books saying that our dusky brothers and sisters could eat in one of our crappy-ass restaurants and not feel like they're going to be taken outside and lynched? How long has that been, huh? So the rest of the world looks at him. If you looked at the crowd in Germany today, in Berlin, the crowd that came to hear Barack was, I'm just guessing, just from looking at it for the 8 or 7 or 6 seconds that the networks showed it to me, the crowd was probably 99.9% Caucasian. Now, in this country, a lot of white people, absolutely. Barack Obama would not be where he is were it not for the support of a lot of white people in this country who are desperately trying to overcome not just their racism, but the kind of negativity that's been injected into us for the past 8 years by these rat bastards who are the Bush-Cheney crime family. So we are more constrained here. It's difficult for us. You have some turd like Ben Stein sitting next to another turd like Glenn Beck talking about, well, now I don't know about 75,000 people cheering. That's a little bit like the Fuhrer in a sports palace. And then Glenn Beck, this bloated white boy sitting there going, yeah, well, you know, I've been saying we're heading toward a Mussolini. No, not Mussolini, dork. Ben Stein is referring to Hitler. Mussolini was not called the Fuhrer. He was called Il Duce. But you wouldn't know that, would you? I don't like white people. You know, if I'm walking down the street and, you know, some neighborhood and I see five or six white people coming my way, I'm going to cross the street, man. I'm going to get the hell out of the way. Tom wrote, honestly, Mike McCain is beginning to look like Mike Gravel in the Democratic primary. The German restaurant was hilarious today, but he'll soon be doing a hitchhiking tour of ham radio stations. Yeah. Oh my God. The McCain thing to me is just astonishing. How did I guess it speaks volumes about the low quality and the low caliber of all those opponents that he had in the Republican, in the run up, you know, the Republican primary season. Because McCain, no matter what this guy does, Barack Obama is on a global tour impressing the bejesus out of people. Today he's in Germany speaking in front of 250,000 wildly cheering non-American citizens. And what does McCain do? Well, my friends, I'm going to go to a German restaurant. And do what? Eat what? Schnitzelbank? Schnitzelbank? Schnitzels? Schnitzelbank, yeah. Ja, das ist ein Schnitzelbank. Yeah, Schnitzelbank. I'm going to go eat a Schnitzelbank. So he goes to a German restaurant. Well, my friends, I don't think you ought to be over there doing that, my friends. You know, I think I ought to be over there doing that, but I don't think he ought to be over there doing that, my friends, because the reason he shouldn't be over there doing that, my friends, is because, have I already said this? I should be over there doing that, my friends, but not him doing that over there. He's not the president. I don't know. I just can I stand in front of the cheese counter again? It was cool there. I could feel the breeze on the back of my neck, or the green backdrop. I like that. That's not the kind of change we can believe in. Remember that speech, the night that Barack Obama declared himself the presumptive nominee. That's not the kind of change we can believe in. And then the nine people sitting behind him, you know, go, Barack Obama wants to bring health insurance to everybody. That's not the kind of change we can believe in. Barack Obama wants to withdraw our troops from Iraq. That's not the kind of change we can believe in. I mean, it's unbelievable. Which brings me to this article I found on CNN about how young conservatives. Can you imagine being a young conservative? How twisted that much must be. I guess if you're a young conservative, you have to drink a lot of Metamucil to clean yourself out, right? Anyway, young conservatives are worried that John McCain is not appealing to their generation. Really? I wonder why. At a town hall meeting in Ohio, a student told McCain that Republicans were a dying breed on his campus. And McCain said, well, I understand the challenge I have, my young friend, and I understand that this election is really about the people of your generation. Huh. Jesus, God, that just makes you want to get up and cheer, doesn't it? It makes me want to grab the nearest flag and just wave it. It makes me want to thump my chest and get one of those stickers that says, you know, pride in America. Well, you know, I understand that this election is really all about the people of your generation. According to the CNN story, many young Republicans say Barack Obama, who is 46 years old, is inspiring voters their age, but McCain is not. Well, I wonder why. This is great. Eric Perlmutter, a member of the Young Republicans at the University of Southern California, said the roaring enthusiasm that follows Obama is missing among conservatives his age. Well, no kidding, you jerkwad. Of course it is. What the hell are you people got to cheer about? Huh? What do you got to cheer about? You're not going to be able to breathe in 10 years. What are you going to, thanks to your goddamn Republicans, what are you going to do? You're going to cheer about that, you twit? You're not going to get a job either, Eric.
Unless you want to go flip burgers or be a young greeter at Walmart.
Young Eric Perlmutter says, quote, "We try to get people out to our college Republican meetings, but we can't seem to draw the same kind of support that the Democrats get."
Well, there's a reason for that. At the July town hall meeting of Portsmouth, Ohio, McCain said he knows that he has, quote, "a lot of work to do, my friends, with the younger voters."
The senator said he needs young conservatives to help spread his message because there's nothing that convinces young people like other young people, unless maybe it's a foot long from Subway. That convinces young other people. McCain also acknowledges the importance of using the internet to reach out to this generation. You know, generation stays in touch. I mean, come on. This generation, the people between the ages of 15 and 25 right now. And McCain says, yeah, well, I need to go look at the internet there and see where everybody is talking. Young Eric Perlmutter from USC said he cringed when McCain admitted he doesn't use email. And then you can compare and contrast Obama, who flips around airport tarmacs all over the world, just digging at his BlackBerry, right? And there's McCain. I'm going to do an email soon. I know that an email would get me, my friends, in touch with the younger people. Now, young Eric Perlmutter from the University of Southern California also pointed out that the images used in McCain's campaign hardly connect to the younger generation. For example, McCain was trying to get out a message about small businesses, and he stood in front of a barbershop showing a red and blue barbershop pole. Jesus Christ. And young Eric Perlmutter said, well, when you see the Main Street barbershop image, you think of, oh, I don't know, 1950s America, right? An entrepreneur, a Silicon Valley guy, would definitely make him more attractive. A barber pole? I missed that one. I got the cheese counter and the German restaurant and the green backdrop and, well, my friends, but the barber pole? When he's talking about entrepreneurs? Oh, yeah, okay, John. We'll all go out and open up a barber shop. No, oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a barber. Really? Yeah, I got one of those poles out there. You do? Yeah, what do you do? I work in international arms shipments. Really? We're both in business for ourselves, and right? Yeah.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour, barbershop, huh? That's entrepreneurship in McCain world.
So he wants to reach young people, doesn't quite know how to do it. According to the Pew Research Center, they did a study conducted between last October and this March. McCain has a big numbers gap that he's got to close among young people. The study found that the current generation of young voters who came of age during the Bush years are giving the Democrats a wide edge. Gee, I wonder why! According to Pew,
Almost 60% of voters under 30 identified or leaned toward the Democratic Party, compared with 30% who said they identified or leaned toward the Republican Party. My question is, the 30%, what are these people? Are their brains just absolutely washed by people like Glenn Beck and this turd Ben Stein? Is that, you know, how do young people identify? I don't get this. I really don't. How do any young people, unless they have been absolutely, utterly corrupted by the adults around them, how do they identify with conservatism as it is now committed in this country, or the Republican Party? These are madmen. The people that run the Republican Party, the people that speak for conservative, are drooling, fanged animals. Why do you young people want to have anything to do with them? For Christ's sake, don't you have a life to live? Don't you have love to discover? Don't you have horizons to reach or stars to soar? God, I sound like, who's the guy on American Bandstand? Dick Clark. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the sun. No, that was Casey Kasem. Oh, never mind. With fewer than 4 months until the November election, according to the CNN article, McCain said he's confident he can convince young voters that he is the candidate for them. Good luck with that, John. He said, quote, "I believe, my friends, that I can convince them that I have the plan of action and the ideals and the goals and the inspiration that as next president of the United States, my friends, I can serve better their interests than my opponent." Oh, my God, that is so, oh, that is so John McCain. That is so John McCain. Oh, and by the way, you know, every time I try to be hip and cool like real talk show hosts and drop in foreign words and phrases, I usually get it wrong. Schnitzelbank. See, when I was a kid growing up, there was a song, Ja, das ist ein Schnitzelbank. Ich, das ist ein Schnitzelbank. And I knew Schnitzel. I guess I thought Schnitzelbank was like the bun it came in, or not the bun, but whatever. But I get an email here about my little attempt at Schnitzelbank. The writer says, the Schnitzelbank, or drawing horse, is a woodworking tool used in Germany prior to the Industrial Revolution. You can eat schnitzel, but not the bench in the song. Schnitzelbank. A schnitzel bench? Ich, das ist ein Schnitzelbank. I barely remember the song anyway. So, once again, the bi- and trilingual Mike Malloy doesn't quite pull it off. Let me switch gears here. I'm still just fascinated with the whole Barack Obama thing. We could do the whole program on that tonight, because of what Obama is doing everywhere. I mean, everywhere this guy goes. And we only have a minute left in this segment, so let me just finish this up. Every place this guy goes, whether it's a military base in Afghanistan or some bombed out city in Ramallah, or not city in Ramallah, but some bombed out area of Ramallah in the occupied territories, or a meeting with the Israeli prime minister or the king of Jordan, no matter where this guy goes. Oh, and have you noticed? Remember the other night we were talking about body language. A couple of people wrote into me and said, hey, a nice catch for noticing that. And I noticed it now. I'm really noticing it. Barack touches people. Now, he doesn't come up behind him like Bush does, like Angela Merkel, and grab him around the throat and try to reach around and squeeze their boob. He doesn't do that. What Barack does, these are gentle, loving touches. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that? Doesn't make any difference who he's talking to. When he's introduced to one of these, especially heads of state, there's a touch. There, it's almost a caress. And it's wonderful. I mean, that's the kind of connection that serves two purposes. A, it lets the person being touched know that Barack Obama is not a threat. And B, It also totally, completely breaks down whatever defenses that person might have been thinking about throwing up in front of Barack Obama. How do you be defensive against someone who has just gently placed his hand in the middle of your back, or in a brotherly love kind of way on your shoulder, or taken your hand? How do you know? But Bush,
hey, goddamn it! Look, there's Angela Merkel. Watch this. I'm gonna go up and grab her boobs. Oh no, just kidding. I'm gonna grab her shoulders. How's that?
God damn! Get away from me! Are you out of your freaking mind?
Oh, sorry. I'm just kidding. Here, you want a toot?
Good God.
Wasn't that the same summit meeting where he was caught passing a note to Condi asking if permission to go to the bathroom?
I think it was, yeah.
I need a bathroom break.
I need a bathroom break. Can I go now? Oh, my God. All right, we have a break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I want to tell you a little bit about Ayad Alawi. No. It's not really boring. You know, it isn't. So don't go away. Stay there. This is a big break. We'll be back in about 10 minutes. If you got them, smoke them. No, don't smoke them. If you got them, throw them away. Go get a cheese sandwich. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. Let me see. Dr. Ayad Alawi. Do you know who he is? He's the former interim Iraqi prime minister, and he was referred to when he was the interim Iraqi prime minister, even by members of U.S. Congress, as a, quote, Bush puppet. End quote. Well, he has joined the chorus of apostate leaders of Iraq, the dirty dogs. We put them in office and they turn against us. But he is voicing his strong support for the U.S. military to get out of his country. Get out. This occurred during a congressional hearing yesterday that we apparently missed here. Maya Shenwar, writing at truthout.org, has the story, and it was during his term in office, Alawi's term in office, he was there for about a year, he endorsed the U.S. controversial, the U.S.'s controversial bombings of Fallujah. You remember Fallujah? That's where it turned out that we dropped white phosphorus onto a civilian population and melted their skin, and consequently their capillaries and their blood supply and their bones and their feet and their hands and their faces. White phosphorus, or as it's referred to in the military as Willy Peter, white phosphorus will do that. It's one of those weapons that either has or should be banned as long as we are still uncivilized enough, we being the human species, as long as we are so uncivilized that we decide to organize ourselves into military operations and kill one another, I guess there has to be rules of war, right? Huh? White phosphorus is one of those things that, like napalm, flamethrowers. Anyway, Alawi thought that our bombing of Fallujah was a good thing. And in a lot of his speeches in front of the Iraqi parliament or the Iraqi people, he used almost word for word statements, sentences paragraphs that had been contained in Bush speeches. And the Washington Post reported that Bush administration officials coached this moron on the content of his public comments. They told him what to say. And, of course, prior to his involvement in being a puppet in Iraq, Alawi worked with the CIA. Isn't that interesting? How many people worked for the CIA who eventually come to this country and blow up the trade towers or you know, whatever? Jesus H. Christ. We are just famous. We are known throughout the solar system as being the one society on Earth that trains people to murder their own people, and then they come back and murder us. And we stand around picking boogers going, well, how did that happen? How did that happen? Well, that's not very nice. How did that happen? Over and over and over again, which is a workable definition of insanity, isn't it? Huh? Anyway, yesterday, Alawi called for, quote, a time frame for reduction of U.S. forces, end quote, which stands in stark contrast to the time horizon that Bush recently advocated, a time horizon. Well, somebody, maybe, I don't know, maybe a theoretical scientist, maybe somebody who deals in astrophysics can explain what in the hell is a time horizon. I know there must be such a thing. Is it Einsteinian? Or does it go beyond that? I mean, coming from such a learned man as George W. Bush, it must have a meaning. Has it anything to do with quantum mechanics, maybe? A time horizon. Or is it like that song from Annie? Tomorrow, tomorrow. Could that be? Is it something from The Sound of Music? A time horizon. Oh, never mind. Anyway, Alawi went on and stressed that the Iraqi people's wishes should take precedence in any agreement on the future of the American presence in Iraq. Well, now that's a radical idea. What is this guy, a communist? The wishes of the people of Iraq? He went on to emphasize the need to develop Iraq's political, military, and economic sovereignty. Now, you got to wonder, we've been there for how long now? How long we've been in Iraq? When did we invade? 03, and this is 08. So that statement has special significance because we have totally altered Iraq's economic structures in a way that favor American interests. So Alawi is saying, well, now, maybe that's not such a good idea. Can we have our country back and our banking system and our oil and our, I don't know, anything else? Can we have it all back, please? Alawi said, quote, we are concerned about the protection of Iraqi assets from foreign creditors, end quote. Huh? Are they maxed out on their credit cards, too? He also spoke, here it comes, of the need for Iraq to cooperate closely with powers other than the U.S., like the Arab League. Oh, no! Now, while Alawi is saying all this treasonous stuff, I mean, acting like it's his country or he has something to do with it, I mean, this is a CIA asset, for Christ's sake. He used to work for the CIA. He should know better. You know, just like Osama bin Laden, who should have known better. Osama used to be our boy. How many? Noriega used to be our boy. The Shah of Iran used to be our boy. I mean, you know, what's wrong here? Well, you ever hear of Danielle Pletka? That's her name, Danielle Pletka. She's with the neocon American Enterprise Institute. Well, Pletka was one of the foreign policy experts that was invited to testify yesterday in front of this congressional committee that Dr. Alawi testified before. And Danielle Pletka countered Alawi's call to consider Iraqi public opinion. Ms. Pletka said that American commanders should be given full authority to decide the course of the U.S. military presence in the coming years. She said, quote, "The conduct of war and the protection of our national security is not a popularity contest. Mob rule does not decide how a president deploys troops in his role as commander-in-chief, nor how the Congress allocates money with its power of the purse," end quote. Now, see, that's the kind of arrogant hog snot that the rest of the world despises us for saying. This arrogant thug from the American Enterprise Institute, Danielle Pletka, says that how we conduct ourselves in Iraq is not going to be determined by mob rule. Hey, jackass, they have a government. They have a parliament. Oh, that's right, we're the occupying force. Danielle Pletka of the neocon American Enterprise Institute. Don't you just love these people? Don't you love these people? Huh? This is why the United States of America is in the shape it's in globally. Nobody, nobody gives a damn about us anymore. Nobody. That's why when someone like Barack Obama appears in Berlin and makes a speech that is, I don't care what you think, inspiring, tens of thousands of people turn out. When George W. Bush goes there, they shut the goddamn city down, call out the troops, bring in NATO jet fighters, weld the manhole covers together, close all the rivers, turn off the water, capture his feces and his urine, bring it all home in great big bags, close the windows, lock the doors, pull the shutters. Maybe it's because of people like Danielle Pletka.
Hey, boys, quick, get out of the way. You'd better watch what you say, boys. Better watch what you say. We've rammed in your harbor and tied to your port. And our pistols are hungry and our tempers are short. So bring your daughters around to the bar, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys. Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
In a nation where the dictator treated himself to palaces with gold faucets, gold-covered AK-47s.
Yesterday came suddenly, why she had to...
It's 21 past the hour. Danielle Pletka. I've never heard that name before, but she is some neocon thug at the American Enterprise Institute who says we don't owe nobody nothing. She says American commanders should be given the full authority to decide the course of the U.S. military presence in the coming years. Military commanders, no political solution, just we invaded the country. It's ours. We own it. We've destroyed it. We've seen to the fact over the past, going back to Pappy Bush, over the past 16 years, that hundreds of thousands of people have been slaughtered, men, women, and children. The country is in ruins. The great natural resource, oil, is sitting there, except up in the north where the Kurds have said, screw this, let's pump the oil. We have wrecked and ruined Iraq. We've destroyed its antiquities. Yeah, we did. Because if you're going to occupy a country, you have an obligation to protect that country's resources. You have an obligation. The Israelis stick their middle finger to that obligation. The United States sticks its middle finger to that obligation. The Chinese stick their middle finger to that obligation. And on and on and on. Nobody plays by the rules, do they? So why should we? Antiquities. You know what that means in this country? Something that's 100 years old. Do you know what it means in Mesopotamia? Something that's 7,000 years old. Gone. But the oil ministry maps were protected. Yes, indeedy. Danielle Pletka says the conduct of war and the protection of our national security. What's our national security in Iraq, lady? Is not a popularity contest, she says. She says, mob rule, that would be what, Ms. Pletka? Voting? Do you remember the purple fingers? What the hell is wrong with you, Pletka? Don't you remember it? Purple fingers? They voted? Mob rule does not decide how a president, which, ours or theirs, deploys troops, oh, ours, in his role of commander-in-chief, nor how the Congress, yep, ours, allocates money with its power of the purse. Wow. This woman makes Jean Kirkpatrick look like a snorting liberal. She makes Margaret Thatcher look like Mohandas Gandhi. Remember that name. It will come up again. Danielle Pletka. P-L-E-T-K-A. Danielle Pletka. Remember her name. Oh, and speaking of Obama's speech, while most of Berlin went to the speech, U.S. Foreign Service personnel were banned from the event. The Washington Post says the U.S. Embassy in Berlin instructed Foreign Service personnel stationed in Berlin not to attend Senator Barack Obama's public rally today, which the State Department labeled, quote, a partisan political activity, end quote. Partisan political activity? To go listen to an American candidate for public office speak in front of the Great Gate of Kiev? No, not the Great Gate of Kiev. You know what I'm talking about. That is prohibited under its regulations for those serving overseas, the State Department says. Well, goddammit, then why do people go hear McCain talk or Bush? Huh? How about Bush? Isn't that partisan political activity?
Government employees serving in the United States are permitted to attend such events under the Hatch Act, which bars other partisan activity like, you know, contributing money or working on behalf of a candidate. But the fact that you're working for the U.S. government overseas, that precludes any political activity you could engage in. We're not talking about overthrowing the government of Angela Merkel. We're talking about people walking out on Stupenplatz or whatever the hell the street is and standing there saying, oh, look, there's Obama, Barack Obama. He's giving a speech. Well, that's nice. Another American. I'm an American. He's an American. Hey, look, I'm white. He's not. Oh, this is great fun. Can I wave my American flag? No, schmuck, you can't. And if you show up and the U.S. Foreign Service Company Incorporated hears about it, your ass is going to be fired, and you can go back to your greeter job at Walmart, huh? This is how you browbeat government agencies into submission. No, you can't go. You can't go, but you can go sit over there and drink some victory tea and smoke your victory cigarettes, but you can't go. Nuh-uh.
Just I mentioned early on that I recognize there are hurdles and we're going to achieve those hurdles. There's no doubt in my mind we will.
Twenty-five before the hour, Irish Dave writes in, Mike, funny enough, Coote, that would be McCain, capped his recent international tour with an effing fundraiser in London. Luckily, of course, he didn't take any foreign donations. Did he? Yeah, so Coote? Coote. So McCain can have a fundraiser in London, but Barack Obama giving a speech in Berlin, and then we get this snotty little remark. That was a real knee slapper, too, when McCain said, His adoring crowd is waiting for him, my friends. His adoring crowd is waiting for him, my friends, in Paris. Pause. That would be the American press corps. Oh, God, I'm so... Oh, I can't stand myself. Oh, Jesus, I ought to be on The Daily Show. Oh, I'm so funny, my friends.
My favorite political cartoon, I think, of the year, if not all time, is the one where they had the little bubbles with McCain giving the speech, and it had the backdrop. You know, how it'll say strengthening America or working for our future.
Right.
You know, repeated over and over again.
Right.
And his backdrop said over and over again in little letters, hey, you kids, get off my lawn. Hey, you kids, get off my lawn. It was so funny.
God, this guy. All right. What else? What else we got here? I know I've got more. I guess we could talk about the Barack Obama speech some more, but I know you all don't want to hear about that. So I'll tell you what let's do. Let's do some phone calls. You want to do that? All right, now, wait a second. We got an email here from L.A. It says, you were taken off the air in L.A. for a Sparks game. I don't know what that is. Air America is still sticking it to you, Mike. No. I have nothing to do with Air America, and Air America has nothing to do with KTLK. KTLK has a broadcast schedule. Some nights they have this program on. Some nights they have hockey. Some nights, apparently, they had this is a women's basketball game. But it has nothing to do with Air America. It has to do with the schedule that KTLK is comfortable with. That's all. So, I have nothing to do with Air America, except wanting desperately to get them into a courtroom so I can sue them for the money that they owe me, that they will not pay because they are fascist sons of bitches who fooled everybody into believing they were going to be a liberal network, which they are not. So... No, it's okay. I understand the frustration, but again, KTLK or any radio station that deals with Nova M, whether it's me or Randy or whomever, excuse me, they work in their local market. They broadcast in the local market. They have got to do those things that are most appealing to the broadest section of their local market. That's all. So, very simple. So, yeah, I hate not being on the second largest radio market in America every single night, but it just works out that way. I'm just extremely grateful that KTLK decided to take the program at all. I'm a little dangerous, you know. I'm not Phil Hendry, but, you know. Okay. Phones, 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. We have 1, 2, 3 open lines, so... Let's start with Rob, who is in Tacoma, listening on 1090 AM. Hey, Rob.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. What I wanted to say is this. You know, this is really great that we are, you know, getting pumped up about Mr. Obama. He would be an excellent president. But to me, I feel like this. You can't have a dork like McCain having meetings in people's houses when he knows he can have meetings other places. The Republicans know that this person is not going anywhere. They know that Mr. Obama can get somewhere, and they're going to come at people with fear, like being attacked from without, when we actually know it's going to happen from within, and we're going to have martial law.
Wait, you lost me back with McCain having house meetings. I'm sorry, Rob.
Okay.
I'm real high on adrenaline tonight. Go ahead. Try
okay.
to get it.
When you can have Mr. McCain having meetings inside other Republicans' houses,
right?
Okay, when Mr. Obama is having these vast, big meetings in Germany,
right,
you know that Mr. McCain can have these vast meetings as well.
Right.
But the Republicans know that he's not going to get in office, and they also know that Mr. Obama's not going to get in office because they are playing on the card of fear, okay? And they're going to use that card with a attack which equals martial law.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not, Rob. I mean, I certainly hear what you're saying, but I don't know. I think if this country ever went to martial law, there would be millions of us who would. If this country ever, if any administration ever tried to put this country under martial law for some phony ass reason, there would be millions of us who would. Just the sentence just won't come out. Rob, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. I like to believe there would be millions of us who would immediately say no, hell no, and resist. But, I can't think of any reason that a democracy or a democratic republic, whatever we are these days, with a constitution, I'm talking like it was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that the population of said country would allow itself to be placed under martial law. I don't know. I think there would be resistance if that were ever to happen. Because martial law, that ain't beanbag. Martial law suspends everything and replaces everything with quickly developed military rules of engagement. Do you know what rules of engagement are about? That's the conditions under which you open fire. Usually martial law states that there will be no public meetings, there will be no gatherings, there will be no demonstrations. The governors of the states are replaced with military commanders. The police departments and National Guards are instantly federalized. I mean, on and on and on. Yeah, martial law ain't beanbag. Martial law is usually, at least it's been my observation that this is true, martial law is usually the last step before open, unbridled, massive violence, where a society totally collapses. So I don't think that we'll come to that here, because I think to some degree our corporate form of government still has just a residue of fear about we the people. Not much, but just enough to inhibit some type of insane, catastrophic measure like martial law.
Well, first they'd have to go about banning all our guns. They wouldn't do it as long as there was an armed populace. I really believe any time, when I'm going to worry about martial law is when they do pass an actual gun ban and come knocking on your door and taking them away. And then it's like, okay.
No, it's not okay. Then it's Katie bar the door. Okay, let's go back to your phone calls. Len is calling from New York, listening on the internet. Hey, Len.
Hey, how you doing there? I'd better worry about Marshall Dillon. You remember Marshall Dillon?
Yeah, I remember. What was that guy's name? His
Walter Brennan. I don't know.
Walter Brennan.
I think he was the one who used to call Marshall Dillon. Marshall Dillon. Anyway, but one of the things I was calling about had to do with the Wild Wild West. You know, McCain's name being Maverick.
Yeah, sure he is.
You remember Maverick was like another TV show?
Oh, Brett Maverick and Bart Maverick. Oh, God, I used to love that program. That was on when I was, I don't know, a teenager. I used to think Maverick was the greatest. It was so funny. It was like the Daily Show set as a Western. I love it.
You know, I really don't remember it that well.
Well, you're not old enough.
I remember it, but I don't remember it well. I was a Bonanza lover.
Oh, God. Hey, hold on. Let me put you on hold, Len, and we'll pick you up the other side of the break. Bonanza. Bump-a-da-bump-a-da-bump-a-da-bump-a-da-bump-a-da-bump-a-da-bump. I hated Bonanza. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
It's too late now, and I know you'll never change. As she said, you're just a Coca-Cola cowboy. You got an Eastwood smile and Robert Redbird hair. Oh no, it's true. I'm a sensitive cowboy and I don't know what to do. Oh no, it's kind of strange. I'm the last sensitive cowboy. Oh no, no, it's true. I'm a sensitive cowboy and I don't know what to do. Oh no, it's kind of strange.
10 before the hour, we're talking with Len, who's listening via the internet in New York. All right, where were we?
Oh, we were on the Maverick.
That's right.
Which I didn't know. But, you know, they call him a Maverick.
They call him, yeah.
And I want to get his name changed after his flailings over the last couple of days changed to Desperado.
The Desperado.
Absolutely. I think he should be labeled Desperado at this point after attacking Obama the way he has, you know, saying that he'd rather lose a war to win an election.
You know, I saw that comment being presented to Obama for comment by, I think, Charlie Gibson tonight during his little 3-minute one-on-one interview in Berlin. And Obama refusing to go for the bait, which is what Charlie Gibson was hoping for, since Charlie Gibson and George Stephanopoulos were the two who so embarrassed themselves during the Clinton-Obama, one of the Clinton-Obama debates. But Obama didn't go for it. Obama just sat there and said, well, you know, I've known John McCain for a long time. I've never questioned his dedication to his family and to his children, and I can't believe that he is questioning mine. And then he just dropped it. I mean, you know, the best way to respond to these garbage mouth Republicans is just like that. Just
you know, it's gonna have to get a little louder at some point. And you know, maybe you know, one of the things I was thinking of, because they love to push it, but they're talking how the race is tightening. And you know, I think right now the race is where it is because the Democratic ticket is 100% black. And once he chooses a vice president and it goes down to 50% black and 50% white, I think there'll be like, you know, a couple of percent will just feel, go, whew, whew.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. This is racist America. It is sexist America. It is an America that is full of all those ISTs. You know, this is homophobic America. This is anti-Muslim America. To some degree, it's anti-Semitic America. I think you're probably right. There is going to be a white moment, if you will, where white folks will say, oh, God, he didn't pick P. Diddy. Oh, good. he picked a white man. Oh, good. He didn't pick thank you. Okay.
My favorite, and you know, he's in the top one or two that's named, and since 2006, I thought he should run for president because there's a white old guy who couldn't lose is Biden. You know, he's got one or two faults, but overall has been a very fine Democrat. The biggest fault coming from Delaware and being in the pocket of the credit card companies.
Well, yeah, and all the phony corporations who use Delaware as the way in.
Well, that's reasonable business. But by the way, you were talking about what's her name?
What's her name?
Pletka, who I've seen on TV a number of times, and you probably didn't know this, but when God created William Crystal,
yeah.
He pulled out his boner and created a woman, and that was Danielle Pletka.
He pulled out a bone, is what you said, and created Danielle Pletka. I'll tell you, somebody sent me a picture of her. This is a scary looking person, just looking at the picture. But to hear her say what. And I didn't hear it. Somebody sent me the transcript of what she said. But to believe that somebody would say that about a sovereign nation as brutalized as it has been by its own leaders and now by the occupiers, to say that they don't have a voice, and if they attempt to have a voice, it's mob rule. My God! I mean, where does that come from?
It comes from the difference between the two plans. McCain and Bush have a plan to stay, and Barack Obama has a plan to leave.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I guess that sometimes the simplest answer is the most correct answer.
One other note, you know, for the Orthodox Jewish community, mm-hmm. I mean, I can't wait to see them in synagogue this week. You know, if they say one question, I said he used as a backdrop. Did you see the backdrop he used when he was talking in Israel? Do you know what that backdrop was?
Obama?
Obama.
No. What did he use?
What you saw there was like what looked like a bunch of wreckage, like a junk pile behind them. They have like a stack of all of the spent rockets coming out of Gaza that have hit that town.
Oh, yeah?
And he was standing. That speech was in front of all those rocket casings that have exploded, and they just piled up, and they don't, like, discard them, you know, as a monument to what the hell's been going on there.
What did they use as a backdrop in Ramallah?
You know, I didn't notice that. I don't know Ramallah.
Maybe
that well.
maybe a stack of dead children.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they stack them, but... you know, the bottom line there, you know, every time, like Cass Sunstein, did you mention that?
Yeah, Cass Sunstein, yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, that got me, you know, and every once in a while, like today, and what I know is Obama will try to create peace. I just know it.
Well,
regardless of history.
I hope he does.
He'll try to turn it into peace.
I hope he does, and I also think, and Len, I have to leave it there. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. But I think there is a very strong movement now in Israel, and by what's his name, the head of the Palestinian Authority, drawing a blank, but don't email me. There's a strong realization that there has got Mahmoud Abbas. There has got to be a resolution. Or as some of the writers, like Oz, like some of these other people, these writers in Israel who have much higher standing than writers in this country, as they're pointing out, if there is not resolution, if there is not some kind of agreement, then Israel is going to become like apartheid South Africa, where a minority of people control the country, while the majority, which will be the Palestinians, will be forced into Bantustans and until the day comes when there is violent revolution. So and Obama may be the man who can not engineer or preside over that, but just be our representative.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back, 7 past the hour. The Malloy Show on Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for still hanging around. I am impressed. We got a whole clutch of emails here about Walter Brennan. Len, listen up. It wasn't Walter Brennan. It was Dennis Weaver, who is Chester on Gunsmoke. Walter Brennan had a limp in The Real McCoys. That's from Bon Air. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, 11. 11 emails about that, which is cool. You know, I love it. So there you go, Len. Tomorrow's the day. Don't forget, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, the hearing to examine what is called the Imperial Presidency of George W. Bush. No, it's not an impeachment hearing. Wouldn't allow that. That's off the table. It's going to be 2 hours, and in that 2 hours, there will be two panels. Now, this is a result of Dennis Kucinich introducing several resolutions calling for Bush and Cheney's impeachment. But they're going to be two panels, and I think they each have 2 hours. Vince Bugliosi, of the author of The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, will be one of the witnesses. Oh, God. So they put out a witness list here. Check it out. There will be two panels. I guess one for 1 hour and one for the second hour. I wonder who's going to carry this. I wonder if C-SPAN or if they'll have more important things to cover, like, comments from the Senate. I wonder if CNN will cover this. I wonder if MSNBC will cover it. What do you think? Anyway, the two witness panels. Here's the first one. Dennis Kucinich, Ohio rep. Maurice Hinchey, representative from New York. Walter Jones, representative of North Carolina. Brad Miller, representative from North Carolina. Panel two, Elizabeth Holtzman, former representative from New York. Bob Barr, former representative from Georgia and the 2008 Libertarian nominee for president, and one of the managers, impeachment managers against Bill Clinton, oddly enough. Rocky Anderson, founder and president, High Roads for Human Rights, and the former, wasn't he the mayor, or maybe still is, the mayor of Salt Lake City. Stephen Presser, Northwestern University School of Law, professor of legal history. Bruce Fine and Vince Bugliosi. Bruce Fine is a constitutional scholar and, of course, also went after Clinton. Bugliosi, author, former L.A. County prosecutor. Jeremy Rabkin, professor of law, George Mason University School of Law. Elliot Adams, president of the board, Veterans for Peace. And Frederick A.O. Schwartz, Jr., senior counsel, Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 people. There are 120 minutes in 2 hours with no testimony, no questioning from the panels, just statements. That means each witness would have 10 minutes to lay out their case. And Conyers has said there will be six areas the hearing will explore. One, improper politicization of the Justice Department, U.S. Attorney's offices, including potential misuse of authority with regard to election and voting controversies. Christ, that would take a week to examine. Number two, misuse of executive branch authority and the adoption and implementation of the so-called unitary executive theory, including in the areas of presidential signing statements and regulatory authority. There's another week. Three, misuse of investigatory and detention authority with regard to U.S. citizens and foreign nationals, including questions regarding the legality of the administration's surveillance, detention, interrogation, and rendition programs.
That would take a month, so we're up to 6 weeks now. Number four, manipulation of intelligence and misuse of war powers, including possible misrepresentations to Congress related thereto. Now we're at 7 weeks. Number five, improper retaliation against administration critics, including disclosing information concerning CIA operative Valerie Plame and obstruction of justice related thereto. Now we're at 2 months. And last, misuse of authority in denying Congress and the American people the ability to oversee and scrutinize conduct within the administration, including through the use of various asserted privileges and immunities. Now, if you believe that all that is going to be covered in 2 hours by 12 witnesses, I have a real nice piece of property that I'd like to interest you, get your interest in. It's about 12 miles off the coast of Long Island. This is astonishing. I mean, this is an embarrassment. This is a prostitution of the obligation as laid forth in the Constitution of the House Judiciary Committee. Now, there are honorable members of the House Judiciary Committee, but tomorrow morning they will be operating as a passel of whores. No offense to sex workers. That's how they will be operating. 2 hours? Let's supposing it goes 3 hours. How about four? Five? Six? The cowardice here is raising a stink that we will be able to notice on the West Coast, in the Midwest, the South, and the Northeast, as it pours out of the House Judiciary Committee tomorrow. It will be the stink of cowardice. It will be the stench of absolute, utter fear to do exactly what the Constitution requires. Meanwhile, the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, and all his various and sundry bastard offspring will either ignore this or mock it, and the Bush crime family will treat it with the kind of contempt that, in this case, I agree with him, it richly deserves. John Conyers, as the chairman of that committee, is displaying a complete contempt to an equal degree that Dick Cheney has displayed that contempt for the U.S. Constitution. John Conyers, shame on you. Shame on you for what you're doing tomorrow. Shame on you. And don't think for a second that the American public, some of us anyway, are going to be fooled into believing that what you are doing has any basis in law or justice whatsoever. It does not. It's a goddamn hearing. You might as well be checking into why the price of eggs has gone up 27%. That's how important your toy hearing will be tomorrow. Oh, you got a great panel. Oh, my God. Elizabeth Holzman. Woo! Kucinich? All right. This creepy closet Nazi Bob Barr? Okay. God, I hate these people. And I'm talking about the Democrats. The absolute disgust of this. We're going to hold a hearing tomorrow on the imperial presidency of George W. Bush. It's a shame. It's a shame. But anyway, we will watch and report tomorrow, and perhaps you will too. It's scheduled for 2 hours beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And we will watch the terrible, terrible train wreck that now represents constitutional government in this country. We have watched the executive branch use the Constitution as a piece of bathroom tissue. And now we're going to watch the legislative branch do the same thing. Stay with us. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
He lied to us once, but I don't want him lying no more. Well, there's a mountain of bodies. There's a mountain of debt. There's a mountain of troubles. And it ain't over yet, said hey. President has got to go. He's got to go. We want our country back. We're
gonna get it. Want to show him the door. Chemicals and nukes, you know, they never did appear. Yellow, orange, and red, just to keep us in fear. He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse. Plenty capable of conducting foreign policy for the United States in a way that reflects positively on my nation.
Yeah. How's that coming, by the way, huh? 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Ron is calling from Ambler, PA, listening on the internet. Hey, Ron.
Hey, good evening, Mike.
How you doing?
Yeah, okay. You said something earlier about the Obama speech, and I've been sort of like circling around it, you know, taking little bits of the YouTube video or whatever, you know, and I can't do it.
Tell me
why. I can't do it.
Why not?
Well, it's just, I don't know how to say it. I don't want to sound insulting to any of the listeners or anybody, but you know.
Yeah, not on this program. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
After his vote on H.R. 6304, the FISA extensions,
right.
I feel gut shot.
I hear you.
It's like one of those things. I feel like, you know, you have your hopes, you know, dashed so many times, you know, after, you know, certain elections, you just get kind of like to where you just, you don't think it just, it doesn't function anymore.
I know, you're in PA. Let me give you, Gene in LA wrote in, and just let me give you the last sentence of his email. He writes, for me, the irony of Mr. Obama's speech in Berlin today is that he's about as far away from America right now as his governing policies are. To being change that America's poor should bother believing in. Mr. Clinton, another centrist, felt was the same way. But that's not the sentence I wanted. Where is it? Oh, here it is. Mike, since Mr. Obama and his mass marketing machine, or I should say political campaign, wrapped up the nomination, we've seen him vote in favor of increasing the government's ability to spy on us, and seen him and his spokespersons reveal his shockingly non-left-wing policy positions on a number of issues. So I think what Gene in L.A. is saying is essentially the same thing you're saying. The speech and what I was the point I was trying to make tonight, every time Barack Obama speaks, people respond. They respond on a gut level. They respond almost with I don't know how to explain it. I've seen this a couple of times in my lifetime where somebody, a political figure, has this kind of charisma.
Right.
Where it is not so much what they're saying, it is what was said by other people before they took the political stage. If you think back over the past 7.5 years, nobody in the Bush crime family has said anything that wasn't negative, down, ugly, nasty, illegal, unconstitutional, full of hate, full of lies, full of deceit, full of poison, fear, anxiety, and anguish. So along comes Barack Obama, or someone like him. In this case, it happens to be Barack Obama.
The Pied Piper?
Nothing wrong with the Pied Piper. Remember what the Pied Piper did? He got rid of the rats out of Hamelin.
That's right.
And tossed them all into the sea. So, you know, the Pied Piper was not a bad guy.
Well, yeah.
Except he took the children after he didn't get his paycheck. So there may be another story there. But the point here is that Barack Obama shows up just at a time when most people are about to suck on the gas pipe. I mean, you don't know how many emails I get, Ron, from people who are just like right on the edge of despair. I've been there too. And you know, for the political scene in this country, the economic scene, to put me or other people on the edge of despair, this is America, for Christ's sake. It shouldn't be that way. So here comes Obama. And yeah, he votes for FISA. Yeah, he probably is going to turn out to be another corporate shill. But in the meantime, when he gives these damn speeches, the whole world wants to hear this. We want to hear it. The Germans want to hear it. The Israelis, the Palestinians, the Iraqis, the Afghans, the Europeans, they want to hear this because of what has gone down for the last 7 years.
Well, but there's a problem in that for me, though, too. You know, you can't rely upon other people to bolster your feelings. You can't.
Oh, sure you can.
You're gullible as heck. I mean,
No.
And you know, the whole, like, you know, John Kennedy's valences of him being in Berlin. Oh, man, that makes me, like, cringe.
Okay, but wait a sec. I disagree with you there. Leadership, that's one of the qualities of leadership. It's not that they think for us. It's not that they make decisions for us. A good leader is somebody who leads, somebody who sets a tone, an emotional tempo, an idealism. And
I agree with that. As long as they're honest, you know, what, at least that, you know.
What else can a president of the United States do? He doesn't have any legal power. He has the only power he's got that's worth a damn is the veto power. That's it. According to the Constitution, the power resides in the Congress. It just so happens that the House and the Senate have tossed their constitutional power into the dung heap and given it over to these thugs in the Bush crime family. But the president doesn't have any power. He doesn't have any power. He has the power to be the executive, the person who stands out there. Teddy Roosevelt talked about the bully pulpit. That's all he's got. You know, he can lead. So that's what Obama is doing. He's a senator. And he's acting like a president. And the reason it is very confusing is because he's not a president. We know his voting record. We know what he's done since he's got the nomination. And yet he's still out there saying things that we are desperate to hear. You get it?
All right, Mike. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take it easy, Ron. We'll talk again. We'll be back after the break.
Don't worry about what makes you cry. Your child's in our right. How they gonna die? Gasoline's in short supply. ExxonMobil is barely getting by. With millions in profits, it's just another lie. Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state?
Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Twenty-five before the hour. Well, we just got this. A $5,000 reward is being offered to any Auckland University student in New Zealand who can make a successful citizen's arrest of U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice during her visit to the country this weekend. Auckland University Student Association President David Doe said the arrest would be for her role in, quote, overseeing the illegal invasion and continuing occupation, end quote, of Iraq. He said, quote, it is hard enough living as a student in Auckland these days without having a war criminal coming to town. So we thought we'd give our students a chance to make a dent in their student loans and work for global justice at the same time, end quote. Rice will be in Auckland on 26 July, where she will meet with Prime Minister Helen Clark, Foreign Minister Winston Peters, and Opposition Leader John Key. She will make her first trip to New Zealand after attending a meeting of the ASEAN Regional Forum this week in Singapore. $5,000 New Zealand dollars. Go for it, guys. Arrest her. Seriously, arrest her. Get her. God. Every single member of the Bush crime family is at risk and should be, when they travel abroad, at risk for arrest, detention, and eventual rendition to The Hague, where they would stand trial for crimes against humanity, war crimes. That's how bad it is. And again, this is one of the reasons that Barack Obama is able to energize, vitalize, inspire so many massive crowds, whether it's here or anywhere. It doesn't make any difference.
We've had Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Negroponte and Poindexter and Bush and Cheney. I mean, monsters, monsters. Ashcroft, Gonzalez. I mean, think of this crew. Addington. Think of these people. Scum, filth, anti-American, anti-human. The country, this country, has been in the clutches of these bastards. Aside from the political trash heap they placed us on, look at the economy. Look at everything. All of it. Broken, ruined, crapped on, destroyed. And again, to you right-wingers who hover around this program like flies around a dung heap. Yeah, and I know what I'm saying with that. Call me. Tell me one thing these rat bastards have done. These Bush crime family thugs. One thing they have done that is a plus for this country. One thing. One thing. You cannot do it because there's been nothing. Nothing.
And Novak and Glenn Beck have the nerve to say that Obama is in danger.
Ben Stein, not Novak.
I'm sorry. They look so much alike. Ben Stein has the nerve to say that Obama might be a Nazi.
Well, only by inference. Back to your phone calls. Leanne is calling from San Diego, listening on the Internet. Leanne, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm fine. You know, you brought exactly what I want to talk about. I have to agree with Ron, and I have to disagree with you for once.
No, go ahead. No.
I believe precisely that is why we picked the wrong candidate to represent the Democrats. We have Nazis right now in high office, meaning Cheney and Bush.
Right.
We needed a leader. We need a tough leader. We need someone that is going to rip these people out of office like a cancer. Grandpappy Bush, his father, or Grandpappy Bush was a Nazi sympathizer.
Right.
And he tried to overthrow this government in 1933,
mm-hmm.
and he was stopped by Smedley Butler.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They have been allowed to stay in office. The Democrats have enabled them, like Nazi sympathizers. Barack Obama is a Democrat, and I believe that if he were able to impeach Bush, he would do nothing. We needed someone like Kucinich. We need someone like Kucinich. We need someone that is really going to be serious because we are dealing with a very serious problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are dealing with killers, and they will try to buy you off first, they'll threaten you second, and then they'll kill you if you do not do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at the American people, you know, I know that we don't like to think about this. We want to think that Barack Obama, the pipe dreamer or whatever, is going to take away the pain. And maybe he will. Maybe that's how some people can go to sleep at night. But I harbor no illusions that this man is going to really be able to change. It's over. I mean, it is totally over. And I think what's really going to there's going to be violence. There's going to be a lot of tumultuous times ahead of us for things to really change. Mm. And I think until people realize that and really digest that and say, hey, you know, this is one guy. And the system, things are really bad. I mean, these people have been allowed to be in office since the 1930s. So they've done real damage. And even if Barack gets in there and the Democrats get in, okay, so for 4 or 8 years, we'll be protected, and then what? You don't think they're going to be behind the scenes creating more problems like another 9/11?
Mm-hmm.
They'll always be out there, and I think that's why You might as well get someone in there, and maybe, I don't know, maybe McCain is the guy to get in this time. Let him ruin this country so people will wake up and go out and do something. And I think that's the only time things change is when you do something. When you have cancer and you just give someone morphine, it takes the pain away, but it's not going to get rid of cancer.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I certainly agree. I mean, let a Republican be president was a theme that I talked about months and months and months ago, if not a year or two ago. As far as Obama, yeah, I was a Kucinich supporter. Then I was an Edwards supporter. And almost by default, I wouldn't call myself an Obama supporter, but I will guarantee you that come election day, if the two names on the ballot are Obama and McCain,
I'm probably going to vote for Obama, even though here in Georgia I could probably vote for Bob Barr, possibly Cynthia McKinney, possibly Ralph Nader. But as far as Obama being whatever Obama is going to be, I understand the point of view that you're making. And,
yeah, but we voted for Democrats, and I mean, this, you talked about the impeachment hearing. It's a joke.
Right.
I mean, do you realize what they're doing? They're like Nazi sympathizers too. They're enabling Bush and Cheney, who are Nazis, to stay in there. So why would you keep voting for a party or people in a party that continue to enable killers? I mean, it makes no sense to me.
No,
and
it doesn't.
I know Democrats, you know, the people that call your show, I mean, they've got great ideas, and we're all hopeful that the Democrats would be able to change things. But the reality is they have not. Mm-hmm. They have done nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Well, that certainly is my position. If you listen to this program on a regular basis, you know that.
So I think to keep going in that direction, it's the wrong direction. We got to think of something else. Why do we keep? I mean, you just said a second ago, doing the same thing over and over,
right,
it means that you're, you know, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
You know, you're mentally ill. So let's go another direction. Let's cause some. You know what I mean? Like, cause something to happen. We're all like in this deep, you know, this, we're like medicated, walking around like zombies, doing the same thing over and over. Let's get some action going. Let's get something going, like you said. Wake up. Don't vote for, don't keep doing the same thing that you do over and over, because you're going to get disappointed. Then you're going to get depressed. Then you're going to continue the cycle, and it keeps happening over and over.
Well, I can't argue with you.
Well, thanks for letting me rant on your show.
Sure.
I think you're the greatest, Mike.
Well, not
you are.
Really.
You're the best talk show host out there, and that's why everybody listens to you. Because you know why? I'll give it to you in a nutshell. You do not just toe the line and say the same thing. You're really objective, and I think as Democrats, that's what we really want to hear. We don't want to hear the same old thing. You're very objective, and I love that about you.
Well, thanks, Leanne. I certainly appreciate it. Thanks for the comments. You know, I can't disagree with anything Leanne said. I've got a couple of regular emailers who tell me the same thing over and over and over again. Why do you want to continue to repeat the process that has taken us nowhere? And what that means is vote for another Democrat, whether it's Obama or most of the people who wanted to be the Democratic nominee, with the exception of Kucinich and the exception possibly of who? I'm sure there's at least one more. And if Cynthia McKinney or Ralph Nader or Bob Barr, forget Bob Barr. If Cynthia McKinney or Ralph Nader are on the ballot, why not vote for him or her? And I don't have an answer. I really don't. Maybe it is cowardice on my part too. You know, I really don't have an answer. I know, sitting here right now, that when I walk into the voting booth on November whatever, if there are only two names on that ballot, if there are four names on that ballot, Nader, McKinney, Obama, and McCain, I think I know I'm going to vote for Obama. Maybe not. Maybe in that moment, I'll remember what Leanne said or what Lance said or other people have said, and I'll just say, no, I'm not going to do it again. I don't know. Ten before the hour, thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, the podcast manager, And our creative geniuses, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Sharon Gordy. Also, our executive producer, Catherine Bay. You folks in the Seattle area, have you gotten your tickets yet for the gig coming up August the 16th? It's a Saturday night from 6 till 9 p.m., and it is going to be an absolute blowout. The Town Hall Forum, well, not the Town Hall. This time, a bigger venue. It's going to be at Civic Center, I believe. Seattle Civic Center, is that what it's called? I should know that, shouldn't I? Anyway, if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, go online, am1090.com, and get your tickets. Rachel Maddow, Randy Rhodes, Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Sam Cedar, and moi, all emceed under the firm hand of Ron Reagan, live and in living color. It's going to be an absolute, I don't know, it's there's no telling. But if you have not got tickets yet, if you're in the Seattle area, do it. August 16th, 6 to 9 p.m., and I don't know, maybe we can all get together afterwards and just get rowdy and all get arrested or something. Huh? You want to do that? No? Back to your calls. Don is calling from Kansas City, listening on Sirius. Don, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Don.
Yeah, I just wanted you to know that I'll get everything cleaned up, my rifles and my handguns. When the day comes that you say, let's do it, let's do it.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I hate to talk like that because, you know, I wasn't brought up that way. I really wasn't. I was brought up to respect the law, to understand that there's certain boundaries and parameters and yada, yada, yada. But when you see your leaders committing acts of treason, acts of criminal behavior, a torture, for God's sake, then, yeah, then it's no longer fun and games. Then it's no longer, the leaders are not obeying the law, but I have to. Now, I hear what you're saying loud and clear, pal.
Yeah. If they declare martial law, I'm off there.
Yeah, I'm not going to live in a country that's under martial law simply because some thugs in the White House or the Justice Department have decided that the only way they can control me and my fellow countrymen is using martial law. No, I will not. I will just make that declaration, as you are. I will not tolerate that. I simply right. will not.
Have you heard anything on that foreclosure bill that passed the House of Representatives, but it's going over to the Senate? Have you heard anything negative about it?
I haven't been following it that close. I thought it had already. I'm not even sure where it is, Don.
Anyway, I was listening to Tom Hartman earlier today, and he brought up the fact that there is a component in there where it says that when you go to take out a loan now, if this thing passes, if you go to take out a loan and your loan is approved, you have to be fingerprinted, and the fingerprints are going to be turned into the FBI, and the FBI is going to have the ability to sell this to corporations.
You're kidding me. This is on Hartman's program.
Yeah, it was on Hartman either today or yesterday. I can't remember which. But he said there's a component in there that people are missing. And we've got to let people know that this thing can't go through. That part of the bill has to be thrown out.
Well, I don't see Tom that often, but I'm going to see him in less than a month, and I'm going to have to ask him about this. You know, Hartman usually gets information like that and is able to put it out over his program in a way that we can understand. The problem is, at the time when, you know, Hartman's program's not carried here in the Atlanta area, I have to listen online if I'm going to listen to him, and I'm usually just busy as hell that time of day. But I'll get in touch with them, find out about it. I had no idea. Thanks for bringing that to my attention, Don. I appreciate it, okay?
No problem, Mike.
All right, sir. Take care. Thanks a lot for checking in. Fingerprints? To get a mortgage loan? Oh, God. The worker, the workers processing the loans are being fingerprinted? That was the voice of God. Did that go over the air? Did everybody hear that? Oh, it sounds like I'm talking to myself. Ian is talking in my headphones, and I was just going to say it sounds like the voice of God. If you could hear him, which you can't. The workers. Okay, I'm not sure what that means, but that's all right. No explanation necessary. I'm going to ask Hartman what the hell is going on. Ron is calling from Virginia, listening on the internet. Ron, we got about 30 seconds. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Look, the only benefit of a Barack Obama is not bought and paid for by corporate America. We're going to have to put pressure on him like you would anybody else. You really made an excellent point with respect to the legislature. You look at Albert Wynn, and then we primaried Albert Wynn in this area with Donna Edwards, who is as progressive as Dennis Kucinich. I think we got to stop this crying and gnashing of teeth and flailing of arms and primary these people and put pressure on them. Obama and nobody else is Jesus. Progressives have got to stop being this kind of weak, knock-kneed type individuals, and we have to put fear in them. It's not about being a Republican or a Democrat. It's about being about a movement and certain issues. If we want health care, we press them on health care. We threaten them. We threaten them with losing their jobs.
I agree with that, Ron. I do agree with that. I don't think, though, that progressives are all that weak-kneed. Phony progressives are. I think the Democrats... the leaders in the Democratic Party are. Hey, listen, Ron, thanks, man. I got to go. I'll see you all tomorrow night. All right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.